there are so many different ways to generate leads, but I mean, not to be too direct, but when I hear that, it's just like, well, you need to go make something happen, right? You've got to network better. You know, you've got to become a content expert and use social media to your advantage. And you've got to do something that's proactive rather than sit back and wait for somebody to hand something to you.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die.
All right. Mark Thacker is the president of Sales Acceleration, a firm specializing in sales strategy, sales process, and sales execution. As the leader of Sales Acceleration, he's overseen the growth of over $1 billion in revenue from Sales Acceleration clients since 2011. How freaking cool is that?
Billion is a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
Yeah. Mark, well, we're glad you're here.
Yeah. We're very...
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So you guys, I was looking at your website and it says that you're more than a coach, more than a sales coach. And I know you work with a lot of... sales leaders and trying to help them. Tell me, what are some of the like trends that you're seeing? What are the biggest common issues that people are having in the sales world?
It's still, a lot of it's still basics. It evolves a bit, but it's so much of it is around, it's around finding the right salespeople. So there's still the adage that somebody has to be from my industry. The only way they're capable of selling is if they've spent a lifetime selling this product or service. And we find that that's, you know, short-sighted because the owner may sell that way. But, you know, as you all know, a great salesperson is a great salesperson. And I would often ask them, so how long will it take for somebody to become competent enough to learn enough about your product or service to sell? And they say, it could take, 3-4 months. And I said, well, just so you know, it doesn't take 3 to 4 months to become a really great salesperson. Let's go find that person. And
right,
then let's
exactly.
take a few months and teach them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other philosophy is I can teach skills. It's harder for me to teach attitude. I'd rather hire a happy person and teach them the skill than have a skilled
Absolutely.
Person with a shit attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, so many people talk about culture, and you can't find somebody with integrity or that fits in your culture or, you know, as positive as you said. So, yeah, I totally agree.
So I know that something that we hear a lot of salespeople say a lot is they're not getting enough leads. What would you say is a way to increase their leads?
Well, of course, I think when people say that, that's a very responsive thing, right? Just, please bring me leads and then I can do my job.
Exactly.
All
unfortunately,
from the sky.
Failed.
Just put me in front of somebody and I can close the sale 90% of the time. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I often call aggressively waiting for the phone to ring.
Right, exactly.
That phone rings. I'm all over that.
Yeah.
But
they can even have the whole thing where their hand is on top of the phone ready to answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be so quick to pick up that phone, you'll be surprised. So, yeah, honestly, there's so many different ways to generate leads. But, I mean, not to be too direct, but when I hear that, it's just like, well, you need to go make something happen, right? You've got to network better. You know, you've got to become a content expert and use social media to your advantage. And you've got to do something that's proactive rather than sit back and wait for somebody to hand something to you.
I think that if when somebody says there's not enough leads, the question I would probably ask is, well, where do your customers go right now to network?
Yeah.
And why don't you go there?
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you just suspend your Netflix subscription until you have enough leads, and then you'll be in much better shape.
Imagine like binge selling instead of binge watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or binge eating. Yeah, exactly. What are they reading? You know, who do they talk to? What gatherings do they go to? Right. So go there.
I concur.
So what are some of the strategies that you feel every sales leader needs to do, like on a daily routine, consistent basis?
Well, there's a whole host of them. And again, a lot of them are basics, but the oldies, but goodies, right? I find a lot of people aren't sitting down and meeting once a week, you know, reviewing. It's not just pipeline, but it's, you know, how can I help you, right? What obstacles are in your path? I find a lot of people are meeting kind of indiscriminately sometimes every couple of weeks or whatever. And I had somebody the other day said, you know, we get together once a month. And I was like, well, you've met 11 times and now the year's over, right? I mean, you don't have much chance to impact them. A lot of folks don't go out and do ride-alongs, or if they do ride-alongs, they monopolize the conversation. So you ask them and say, well, how did a salesperson do? And the honest answer is, I don't know, because I spoke all the time and I didn't give them a chance to speak up and actually see how they might do. You know, it's sometimes it's just basics, and you know, they don't get to know the person, the salesperson, or their business very well to be able to understand what motivates them. They just kind of paint it all with the same brush. And so those are still basic things, but when they're not done, they harm productivity.
Mm.
And if a salesperson could become 30% more productive given the same amount of time that they have, what are some of the things that they could do that would make them become more productive?
I think a lot of it is in discovery. You know, we often say that we need people that are better closers and that they need better closing skills, but often they just don't ask the right questions. And if they would ask the right questions, then some of the opportunities that they think are viable aren't really viable. They're spending their time on something that really has no chance to close or won't close anytime soon. And so they just aren't asking the right questions. And so I know when I was managing sales reps, I would always ask them, you know, what do you know? And they would say, well, I think, I believe, I'm pretty sure. And I said, no, what do you know for sure? And they said, well, I guess I don't know for sure. And I said, well, how would you know for sure? And I would ask them. I said, yeah. Well, I don't know if they would answer. And I said, well, I know one great way to find out if they'd answer. Ask them.
Exactly. This is the point that I finally remembered. Salespeople, especially sales leaders, will come into a training program and say, we have to educate our customers. And I'm challenging anyone who's ever said that. Customers are not looking for education. I can't picture one leader of a company with his hand on top of the phone saying, we're pretty stupid over here. I hope those jackasses over there at Acme call me up and educate me. They are not. That's not what they're looking for. They want answers that will help them produce more and profit more, period. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have those answers, you're not going to win. And I'm assuming, Mark, that's how you communicate to people of value, that where is the value? Asking a question will find out what they really need. Telling them a bunch of shit about you finds out nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or tell them what I think they want to hear, but it's actually not what they want to hear. And often we don't even know that because we didn't care enough to ask them the question to find out what's important to them.
Yeah. Without asking what's important.
That's right. Yeah. How would I find out what's important? I don't know. Ask them what's important.
So you were talking about sales manager saying it takes 3 to 4 months for a salesperson to sort of get ramped up to really learn what they need to know. What's some
about
ways
about the product?
Yeah, about the product. What are some ways that you've seen, like the most successful salespeople that you've seen, how are some ways that they've actually accelerated that process? Because doesn't every sales rep want to be off the ground and running within 30 days?
Yeah, I think that's at least what I've learned over my career is there, you've got kind of two different people. You've got the folks that have to know everything there is to know about product service industry before they can go have a conversation, or the people who say, just let me go talk to people.
Yeah, I think the salespeople should be taking their slides away from them rather than giving them by marketing. Like, we're coming around and we're going to do a slide-ectomy. And we're going to take all your slides away, and now you have to use questions and
conversation,
interpersonal skills.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, what is that, right? We've kind of forgotten what that is. I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago, and they had to make a presentation, had to. It's just I couldn't. So finally, the only compromise we could make is put the presentation together, and then don't you dare take that out until you find that it's absolutely necessary to do that. And that was about as good as a compromise as we could come up with. And so I asked him, I said, did that presentation ever come out? He said, no. I said, why not? He goes, well, we just talked to each other. And I said, that is amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
It's not amazing. It's real. I don't want a slideshow.
No.
I want a conversation.
I think slideshows should be used as training tools internally for sales reps. Right. You shouldn't need to have something so complex that you can't just talk.
Or the slides have to be interesting,
yeah,
and valuable, or perceived as valuable. Otherwise, I don't give a shit about the history of your company, and even less about the history of you. I don't care. I tell salespeople all the time that the customer doesn't care if you drop dead right in the middle of your presentation. They go, well, look at that. The salesman died. Look at that. Jeez. Is there anybody else out in the lobby that can help us?
Yeah. We finally have some silence now. He's not talking.
Oh, boy.
So do you think you're, I'm a New York City salesperson. That's how I grew up selling in Manhattan, where fuck you is a greeting and everybody wants a bribe. You grew up selling in the Midwest, where people are actually honest and friendly and receptive and willing to at least have a chit-chat with you. They don't decide quickly, but they're at least willing to see you. Has that helped you or hurt you over a period of time to have the Midwestern style when you're talking to a team from Manhattan?
Yeah, that's a good question. I started in the Midwest, but when I was a rep, I spent more time, around the country, and actually an awful lot of time in Manhattan. And I think I appreciate the Northeast because you actually get to the truth a lot faster.
Oh, yeah. There's the 9-second rule.
Yeah, that's right. In the New York minute, right? So I love people in the Southeast, but they're often even nicer than we are. And so it was a no, 2 meetings ago and 4 hours ago, but they didn't want to tell you.
Right.
So I actually appreciate a much more direct way because the first book I wrote, there was a chapter that said, a no is the second best answer. It's like if maybe just kills you. And, so I love a yes, no's, knows okay. Let's just get to one of those as quickly as we can and benefit the book.
When you write a book, what's your process?
I've learned that I've just got to sequester myself away and just turn off email and go someplace where the phone can't ring and just kind of chunk out content. And I learned the second book that I just wrote, it went much better because I was so worried about how the story was unfolding and I realized I just needed to get the words out. And then after the words came out, I could, massage them and change them and tweak that. But the first one I labored over, each chapter had to be right before I could go on to the next one. And that just took too long to write the story.
And what's on your drawing board?
Well, right now we're really focused on Hope Realized. The book just came out about a month ago. And after the first book, somebody said, I'm sure you'll write a second. I said, no, I don't think I will. And then 5 years later I did. So I don't think I'll say that again. I think there's more thoughts in my head that I've got to get out. But this book was a lot more focused on the small business owner and kind of what we do as a business and, you know, kind of getting that story out.
And is it, I hope they show up for the meeting or I hope they buy?
You're talking about in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more about the struggles of a small and mid-sized business owner, kind of what they struggle with. Some of the things we've talked about, they're amazing people, smart, bright folks, but just typically not an expert in sales. And so the whole title, Hope Realized, was purposeful because a lot of times they don't realize there's a way to go from the place that they're at, kind of the place of hopelessness, to there's a solution out there. And so it was really, and this is what we do for our clients across the, really across North America. So it's really kind of telling that story that there are people out there that can help them and go from the place they are to, you know, a place of productivity.
That's cool. So,
but you wrote it as a parable, correct?
I did. Yeah. To be honest, I'm, if I wrote an academic book, I wouldn't read my own book. It's just, I've got to kind of tell a story. And, so I'm known for that anyway. So yeah, told a story. And although it's not, an actual story, it's really, you know, pick 1,000 or, you know, 10,000 of our stories all kind of mushed into one. And that it is what happens. The names are different and, the story is a bit unique, but it's what we did. Live with every day.
Cool. So I want to go back to your first book where you say no is the second best answer. How can a salesperson, if they're not going to get that yes, how can they at least get to the no faster?
I think a large part is just accepting that no is okay. I think a lot of times, especially younger sales people or people less tenured, you so badly want to hear yes that you're not open to either hearing no or to asking questions that no would present itself. And so it's been a no for a long time, but you actually haven't heard the words or seen the signs. So it's just being open to, you know, I'm okay as a salesperson hearing yes or no. Either one is acceptable. Obviously, we'd rather have a yes, but it allows you to get there much faster.
Cool. It's interesting. My sales guru guy is a guy named Elmer Letterman who sold life insurance in New York City in the 40s and 50s. And his benchmark book is The Sale Begins When the Customer Says No. And that's, you know, up until then, everything's hunky-dory, everyone's happy, you know, or you think you're happy. But what's going on in the mind of the customer is, I can't wait to say no to this guy.
Yeah.
And that... Yeah. That begins the dialogue, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
It does. Yeah. How many salespeople have we traveled with where we walked out and you say, how do you think that went? And they said, oh my gosh, I slew the dragon. That was unbelievable. The guy's definitely buying. I'm just ready for the invoice or whatever it might be. And you say, no, he's never buying from us ever.
Right.
What
ever.
Do you mean? You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the, I'll ask a sales guy. He said, we just had a great meeting. I said, great. Did you get a contract? No. Wednesday, he said, Wednesday. I said, well, when's he going to pay? Well, he's going to pay Thursday. You have nothing. You have nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I'll tell you, we refer to it as BTNA. Big talk, no action.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And there's so many salespeople that are like that. It's scary. Including us, by the
it
way.
Is.
Yeah, including us.
Yeah. We all do that sometimes. Yeah, those are the kind of people that you call them Wednesday or you email them and it's crickets. And you're like, well, they must be busy.
What
and then
happened?
Thursday and Friday. And you're like, what happened? Yeah.
Yeah.
He loved me.
Yeah. I don't get it. So
salespeople ought to have those little cricket things, the little bugs, you know, please, I'll do anything. Yeah. But
they
please,
already hear those. They don't need to carry one around.
Don't do that. No, give them out to your customers.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on.
So, okay, you are the president of a company, and we always like to ask CEOs, how can our diehards, if they're trying to sell to a CEO of a company, what's the best way to make a connection with other CEOs and get through the gatekeeper, so to speak, to get in?
The first thing is, I think you just have to believe that you have a right to have a conversation with that person. That person's no different. One of the things I find with salespeople is when they're selling at a particular level, they would love to sell, you know, at the CEO level or a higher, you know, VP or director level. But salespeople often sell to the level that they think they belong, that they're comfortable with the conversation. And so when you just don't believe that you have the right to kind of sell to that level, you don't. There's a rep many years ago that used to work for me that actually was out of Manhattan. And I would ask him how he always gets to a higher level than everybody else. And he said, because I deserve to. I'm not going to waste my time with anybody lower than that. And because he believed that it came true. But I think beyond that, it's, I honestly don't think the CEO is any different than anybody else. Yes, they have less time and they have more responsibility. But they're also the people that aren't constrained by budget. They can do whatever they need to in order to further the company. If the benefit's greater than the cost, they'll do it. So, what's important to them, right? What are their objectives?
Totally.
And if you can further that, you know, you're in good shape.
And there's also the, I didn't know any better factor, so I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I called the CEO. How'd you do that? I don't know.
I just picked the phone up.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's how I did it. When I called CEOs of Fortune 500 companies on the phone. I found out a way to get to them or what their name was. And then I just called them up on the phone, and they were the least busy of all the people in their company.
Yeah, that can be true. I would often call them at 7 a.m. or, you know, 6:15 at night, and their admin has gone home, and they're like, should I pick up that phone or not? And then they decide to, because maybe it's a spouse or a friend or somebody else.
Or a sale.
Before you know it, exactly, or a sale.
So, when you're coaching somebody, what do you talk about with respect to relationship?
I think it depends on the person that you're talking with, right? To some people, relationship is unbelievably important, and you've got to do everything you can to make a connection. And to other people, relationship is important. It's not important if they get to know you or vice versa. So it's about trying to figure out who that human being is first and finding out what level of relationship is important to them. And then recognizing that alters the length of the sales cycle or the process steps that you go through.
I think that's correct to many degrees. However, you still want to be, regardless of the status of the relationship, you don't know when that customer is going to order or reorder. So you have to stay top of mind.
Sure.
Do you have any recommendations for top of mind? What a salesperson can do to stay top of mind?
I think a lot of times it's, guys as old as you and I, it's, you know, we're used to the Rolodex or the tickler file or all the things that, you know, we used to call, you know, keeping in front of somebody.
Yep.
Then it had to be mail or, you know, a phone call, but today it doesn't have to be. So I think for a lot of people, and I know our advisors throughout Sales Acceleration do this, it's being a content expert and being knowledgeable on the topic. That's what you do in your blog, right? People that are interested in this type of discipline, you're talking and writing about something that's interesting. And so it's a matter of just getting that out in front of them. And, you know, whether it's a newsletter or social media, there's so many forms, video, and there's so many different ways to be able to put interesting information out there that cause them to say, you know, when that time is right and when I do have a need, I've constantly been kind of, if you will, touched by this person or this organization. Therefore, you're top of mind because you've been providing value along the way.
So what Mark is saying here, you guys, is you have to do something that keeps you in front of that customer on a regular basis. And it might be an article that you found that you thought the guy would be interested in or whatever you're posting about on your LinkedIn profile. What are you doing and how current are you? Yesterday I made my first LinkedIn video and it pissed me off that they've had it for months and I just started on it today. Like, why wasn't I an early adopter? And, what's the value of a video versus the text that a lot of people don't want to read? Do you talk about video at all?
We do, yeah. And I think, you know, if anybody spends any time on LinkedIn, you'll notice on your feed that it's not predominantly video. It's pretty video heavy. And even, last year, a couple of years ago, there was so much less video. And so there's all kinds of studies about, you know, the even small snippets. It doesn't have to be 2 minutes or a minute, but sometimes, 15, 20 seconds of something that's insightful. We're a society now that We crave information and we can get it anytime we want, you know, at any time of day. And so just giving them little small pieces of information that's helpful. We very much believe in video.
Everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you. So I think that there is an understanding that if you're in sales and you're not at the top of your technological game, you're going to lose to someone who is.
I totally agree.
It may not always be a value proposition piece. It may not always be some competitive advantage thing, but the way the customer perceives you, like, this guy gets it. He's right on time. He's right on the money. He's right up to date. I want to talk to him a little bit more because I'm not up to date. So
yeah, it's true. There's all kinds of studies out there about how much people learn before they actually talk to a salesperson. And so, you know, now the sales, I wasn't that way when you and I were younger, but now the sales process begins before we've even had a conversation with them. And are you giving them the information that they seek, the right amount of information in the right ways for them to become somewhat educated before they're ready to accept a conversation or with you?
When you and your dad went to buy a car when you were a kid, they relied on the car salesperson for information.
Yes.
Now, when you go to buy a car, you take your kid or your grandkid and you have a piece of paper that you have printed out from the internet that has every single thing about that car, including what the price is.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Now, the car salesperson, he's still stupid. He comes up and wants to today you. You're looking for a new car today? Did you want to lease or buy today? Do you have a trade-in today? If it wasn't for the word today, they couldn't talk. Correct?
Yeah.
And you go,
that's very true.
No, I have this piece of paper. Could you take it to your daddy and tell me if you want to sell me the car at this price or not? that person is, that those jobs are over. They just, the people that have them don't know they're over yet.
I call those people, because it's the word I hear the most, they're seasoned. And that, so that's a nice word for, they're older, they won't change their ways, you know, they won't evolve. But, you know, those terms aren't nice. We'll just call them seasoned.
Unbelievable. And you look at some of the largest companies in the world, and they got a bunch of seasoned salespeople.
Yeah.
And whether they're equipment manufacturers, they're the old guard companies. Manufacturers is probably the oldest guard, the automobile, the equipment, those kind of manufacturers. And then there are the accounting firms and, you know, the big service providers. They're all seasoned. And they're all dead to someone that can hustle.
And then when they lose one of their seasoned people, they just take a competitor's seasoned person. So right. The cycle just continues.
I advise, you know, if a sales manager ever asked me, where can I find a real good salesperson? I said, they're already out there. Either they're just not working for you, or you haven't stolen them yet. So go steal the best salesperson from your competitor, demoralize the hell out of them. And it's a double win. Well, how much do I have to pay him? How much do I have to pay him? Answer, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I want your philosophy on this also. What do I pay a sales rep for a renewal?
I think it depends on if they actually earn the renewal or not. Pay them on a renewal that comes in basically on its own is throwing money away.
That's the Indiana way. You cheap bastards out there in the Midwest, you assume that that guy had nothing to do with it. My opinion is your business is run on renewal. Like, if I can get all my customers to renew their contracts, now I start with a base of zero. But if I have what's called, you know, churn, they use that number, that word churn, which is management's inability to keep customers loyal. That's how I describe it. If you lose 10% of your customers every year, you start at minus 10.
I agree with that, but also, so that may be the New York way. So the other thing I would add to that is I think it depends on efforts, because I've seen many companies that will pay too much on renewals when the rep had nothing to do with it, and then there's just simply somebody that's sitting in the chair, you know, accepting renewals, and so there's a balance between paying for renewals and paying for new business, and that balance is delicate. It's not the same for every organization.
Yeah, I agree with that. But my tendency is to pay for the renewal, because there are some companies, and they're in the uniform business as an example, anything having to do with rental and stuff like that. They typically have a two-tiered sale where the sales guy goes out and makes it. He's a hunter. And then Dwayne the driver goes around and he's responsible for upselling. And they don't pay the sales guy to stick around and build a relationship and get referrals. They wanted to go out and keep pounding the pavement like seriously? Then they wonder why they have 50% turnover of salespeople.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it comes down a lot to attrition, right? If you got an attrition rate that's too high, then you've lost touch with your current customer and you need to have the right people in constant contact with them.
So if you had the constant contact, then the salesperson would be responsible for the renewal. Instead of Dwayne the driver, or somebody internally that's I'm your service representative and I can help you. I don't want that. Bob sold me. I want Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way we feel, right? It's like, you know, Bob made the sale and now that he got it, I'm not important to him anymore.
Right. Where's Bob? Yeah. Oh, he's out. We have Bob doing important things like contacting new customers. Well, what am I, like, you've chopped liver? I don't understand. Where do I fit on the scale of importance in your company?
Yeah, it's not how you run it. Right? We were talking about this earlier. It's not how you want to run your business. It's what do I need? One of my pet peeves today is I think Walmart's changed to this thing where they look at you, you walk out, and if you got anything of size, somebody stops you, asks for your receipt, and starts checking some things off.
Right.
I guess so. I did do that. So my last thought about the company is they don't trust me.
No argument. Yeah, no argument. Yeah. Not somebody helping. Like if you go to Publix grocery store, I don't know whether you have them where you are, probably Kroger's is where you are, but Publix, they'll insist on taking your groceries to the car.
Yeah. I just had that experience last week. I was down in Florida and the lady who had to be 20 years older than me, you know, please let me take this out. And I was like, I can't, right?
Right.
I'm bigger, stronger, younger. I got this. And she almost arm wrestled me, you know, down to the ground to take my stuff out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they won't accept a tip.
No.
I give them I say, listen, I know you're not allowed to accept tips, but let me give you one. And they go, what do you mean? I said, stay out of New Jersey. That's the best tip I can give.
Worth to live by.
And I have made a person laugh. I have made they're endeared to me. And when I come back to the store, they remember me.
I'm sure.
Isn't that interesting?
That's what we want to do, right? Be memorable.
Of course. There's a lady who serves coffee at Publix, and she's from Philadelphia. And she's an older woman. She's a big Eagles fan. And we talk. That's what we talk about. And I'll be in the store and she'll see me and come chase me down and ask me how I'm doing. Have I been home lately? You know, that kind of thing. It's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't get that in New York, but you can get it in Charlotte and you can get it in any city in Indiana, literally.
Yeah.
The smaller the city, the better chance you have at it.
Yeah, I agree. I know when I was for years selling in Manhattan, I would be at a street corner and I make eye contact with people and they're like, well, what's with this guy, right?
Right, exactly. Well,
what's he doing over there? And then if I talked to him, I'd freak him out, you know, whatever. And then once I realized I was doing that, then it was a game, right? I couldn't help myself.
I will go to Starbucks in Manhattan and try to be nice. Hey, how's it going? What do you want? It's a classic. And it's not that they're rude. They're transactional. Mm. And you can be transactional or relational when you're making a sale. My preference is relational.
Yeah, me too.
Amazon has done the best possible way to make an online purchase relational, because they will send you follow-up, hey, we think you might like this. Hey, have you thought about buying this and this together? Hey, your package is on its way. Here's the tracking information. They've done a hell of a job to make it personal. And now with Prime,
yeah, I agree with that.
And they're going to own the grocery store business. I mean, yeah. Kroger's has to get up every morning. They go into a meeting and they look at what Amazon did yesterday. Amazon goes into a meeting every morning. They don't give a shit what Kroger's did yesterday.
Yeah.
Because Kroger's is seasoned. Amazon is brand new. Mark Thacker, amazing CEO who is not just taking sales as a serious business, but is helping thousands of other salespeople impact their success. Way beyond making more sales. He's a thinker and a doer, and I would highly recommend that you go get his new book and that you try like hell to find his old book, which is very difficult to find. But I'm going to beg him for an autographed copy so that we have ours that I can read. But more importantly, this is a person who is impacting the success of you as a diehard, you as a salesperson. Check it out. Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe, rate, and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.